Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Dorothy Holly. Dorothy Holly's book of poetry, entitled A Whole Quart Jar, deals with the themes of American farm life in the 1930s and relationships in an extended family. She has studied with the poets Patricia Dobler, Michael Worster, and Ellen Smith. Her work has been published in Heritage, Pudding, St. Joseph's Messenger, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. A Whole Quart Jar will be published by Foothills Press this summer. Hi, Dorothy. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Congratulations on your book being published.
I'm happy about it.
Okay. So you're going to start with poems from A Whole Quart Jar.
Right. I'd like to share the title poem first, A Whole Quart Jar. We seldom went to the store. In the 20s and 30s on our farm in Ohio, Holstein cows provided milk, Leghorn chickens, eggs, and meat. With the sun still in them, we ate fresh from the garden, or canned for winter's use, peas, tomatoes, beans, and corn. Hands, both small and large, seeded ripened cherries. My mother, when I was 4, took the ones I seeded and filled a whole quart jar. The next poem refers to the REA, which is the Rural Electrification Act that the government passed at that time. Before the magic switch, before the REA brought electricity back long lanes in rural America, back our half-mile lane near Pisgah, we lived in a house heated with wood. The kerosene lamp gave light by night. The cellar provided coolness for food. Water came from our deep-dug well through pipe to pump by the kitchen sink, then heated in the tank by side of the stove. One early morning in the dark of winter, out of curiosity, my brother took a comb, a pale yellow comb made of celluloid, placed it above the kerosene lamp. Quickly it burst into flames. He threw it down the woven bedroom rug. He ran to the barn. Mother and father were milking cows. They came running, found me sitting in the kitchen, found the comb left only a mark. The next poem, Two Rooms. My mother wanted a new house. The old frame one formed shadows in every room. My father found two carpenters to draw a plan of sturdy brick with windows to let in the sun and air. When the old farmhouse was torn down except for two rooms, we found between the walls a big gray rat, now dry, flat, petrified. I picked it up, twirling it by its tail. My mother saw me and was horrified. As the carpenters laid brick by brick, we lived in the two rooms that summer, with one to eat and one to sleep, with a pull-down stairway in between, with doors that let rain pour under, soaking the rugs on the floor. I watched the carpenters shape our future rooms and bath. One night, my brother and I in our beds heard our mother and father laughing as they took a shower outside with the sprinkler they devised. In my manuscript, I have included all the seasons. This one's spring. Spring on the farm was lambing time. The ewes gave birth to one or two, or even three, perchance. The lambs soon found mother's milk, on shaky legs found nurturance. Sometimes, though, reasons unknown, the mother rejected her own. The mother that wouldn't give suck left the lamb helpless except for us. We'd bring them from the barn, place them by the warm stove. I like to hold them, feel the texture of the curly coat. Fill a baby bottle with milk, place a nipple in its mouth. As the lamb pulled back and forth, my hands felt the force of life. Before I read the next one, I would like to explain that Farm people lived a rather limited life socially, and so were usually a little wary of anyone different. A cultural experience. When the fields began to turn green and the forsythia bloomed yellow, wearing black clothes and beard, the rabbi went from house to house. He needed a place to stay while he supervised the farmer's process of milk from cows to cans to city for consumption at Passover in celebration of God's grace. My mother was the only one willing to give him a place to stay. He wouldn't eat with us, but he would accept the eggs my mother boiled for him. He introduced us to the taste and texture of matzah. My father drove him from farm to farm to seal with wire the 10-gallon cans filled with the inspected milk.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Dorothy Holly, reading from her book, A Whole Quart Jar. So for those of our listeners who just tuned in, I want to say again that your book is, you just found out, is going to be published by
right.
Foothills Press
right.
this summer, which is pretty exciting.
It is exciting.
The title of your manuscript, A Whole Quart Jar, is a pretty interesting title. Can you talk about how you came up with that?
Well, it was just amazing to me that I don't remember this experience, but my mother would tell it, as mothers like to do, brag about their children, and that I had seeded enough at 4 years to fill the jar. So that was one of my early poems when I started to think about writing a series.
Okay. And the whole manuscript is about farm life. And it's
sort of
unusual that a whole book is about one subject, and it's hard to do. So can you talk a little bit about the process of writing the book, how long it took, what went into it?
It took years and years because I took years off. I've been a caretaker a large part of my life, and I let that consume my time. But from time to time, I would think of some experience and write it down. And so I knew I wanted a collection, but I really didn't think I would take quite this long.
So when you say years and years?
Well, I think I started in the 80s. That's years and years.
It is. 20 years. Well, we're really happy that you finished the book and are getting it out into the world. Can you read some more poems then?
This I'd like to describe my father. My father, he smelled of the barn and land. He knew when and how to till the soil, plant the crops, harvest wheat and corn and hay. He fed the sheep, cows, pigs, brushed down the horses and called them each by name. He had blue eyes, skin tan like an Indian, and strong muscles. When we went to strange places, he carried me in his arms. Also, I like to write about some of the farm animals. This one is Two King. Before I even knew your name, I was in awe of you, frightened by your immense size, your long legs, powerful hooves, and tail held high. But my daddy was not afraid, carried me gently to the barn to watch you eat hay in your stall, and you watched me with your big eyes. As we began to know each other, I touched your head, gave you apples, and you nuzzled me with your nose. My daddy called you king and brushed you to a sheen. With bit in mouth, bridle, harness, you pulled the plow through hard ground, then the wagon at harvest time. You brought the sweet-smelling hay to the barn as I rode on your back. My legs felt your muscles strain. By then you were called Old King, and you were team with Maud. An unlikely pair. She was no queen. But when you were put out to grace, you remained by her side. This is about my mother. Mother loved to play the piano. She studied at the conservatory. She fed the chickens, hoed the garden, prepared its produce for winter's use, washed the dishes, clothes, and us. Cleaned the house and baked as well. Mother taught school in Westchester before she met and married Father. She sometimes milked the cows, sometimes drove the John Deere. Tucked in our beds at night, sounds came from the old upright. Sounds of Father, Mother, singing a duet. The next poem shows a change in our life. Childhood abandoned. The summer I was 10, I felt as carefree as a breeze in the locust trees. I explored woods and streams, smelled the new mown hay, and my daddy smiled at me as I gave the cows and horses names. He taught me how to feed the chickens, mount and ride the horse, be gentle with the lambs. The summer I was 10, I sat by my silent mother in a room that smelled of roses. She could not utter a word as my father, with eyes shut, lay stiff, brown hands on chest, surrounded by flowers, family, and friends. It was then I decided I'd prepare her tea, do house chores without complaint. The grandparents were an important part of our extended family, and I loved both of my grandmothers, even though they were quite different, and I think it taught me at an early age to respect differences in people and still admire them. Heritage. Grandmother Hans smiled toothless, wore her sunbonnet when outdoors, wore black stockings minus shoes, much to my city uncle's chagrin. Though her formal education was third grade, she read the newspaper to Grandfather daily, set a bountiful table, gave my brother and me hard rock candy when we were left in her care. She played hide-and-seek with us, momentarily easing the loss of a daughter, then a son. Grandmother Beakley gave us history. She could speak three languages. Told of her grandmother from Alsace, told of her life with grandfather. She made butter by the pound to petal, grew a garden of flowers, made old furniture look like new. She wore her hair pulled back with dignity, spoke and lived her deep felt faith, let her grandchildren have water fights, and taught us work is an honor. This is another grandparent poem, Working the Earth. At my father's parents, the steps led from the kitchen to the grape arbor that provided fruit and shade to work. Under the arbor sat a wood workbench where grandmother brought the harvest and cleaned it there with water from the well. In spring, she and grandfather plowed the slope of land facing south and planted carrots, onions, beans, lettuce, tomatoes, dropped and covered cut potatoes. Working side by side, she in her sunbonnet and he in his old felt hat. They didn't talk much, but anyone could tell communication passed between them, this pair working the earth. Under the arbor, too, they dressed the chickens after chopping off their heads, then letting the blood flow. Frightening for a child to see. They dipped them in hot water to pick the feathers, then up the steps to the kitchen, where grandmother had the pot ready.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Dorothy Holly, reading from her book, A Whole Quart Jar. Dorothy, I wanted to ask you about the voice in your poems. It's quiet and it's spare, but it has a lot of power. How did you sort of decide on that voice as a way to talk about these tough poems or this tough material?
Well, it seems to fit the subject and seems to fit me.
Okay. Was that how you always wrote it, or did it develop?
Well, I've had these critiqued a lot and have changed them, but I think My language remains the same. As Pat said once, it was plain, but she didn't mean it as a negative thing. I'm a plain writer.
You mean Pat Dobler,
yes.
Your teacher. But also, one thing I know about your poems is the voice is supported by a really close attention, almost, I'd say, an obsession with sound and line break. Is that something that developed over time also, or...
Oh, definitely. I think by doing some reading, it has developed.
Mm-hmm. You are a member of the Mad Women in the Attic Writing Workshop, and I know that you had the great pleasure of studying with Patricia Dobler, who was a great teacher and friend to all of us. Can you talk a little bit about your experience in the workshop and how that has shaped your writing?
Well, it's a critique of the other members, but especially of your leader, it seems. And then you get ideas. She always praised me for how I kept working on them when they weren't quite right.
Mm-hmm. Revision.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what is the process of revision like if you're writing a book over 20 years? I think for some of our listeners out there who aren't writers, I think that is pretty amazing to hear. So would you work on the same poem over and over or go back to it? Or?
Well, some of them just seem to flow, but some of them require more work, mm-hmm. especially after hearing other people's opinions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about a couple more poems?
All right. The farmers didn't have much equipment in those days, and so when harvest time came, the various neighboring farmers and everyone worked together and took turns going from farm to farm, as it was for this poem called Threshing Time. When farmer and field hands could verify that the wheat was full-breasted and golden, a modern machine or old-fashioned scythe cut the stem from its source of life. When bundled into shocks like a mother hen, it kept the small kernels weatherized, yet gave field mice a chance to glean close to the source of life. This bundling was done in hot summertime by brown-skinned, able-bodied men who worked quickly and quietly in their prime. My cousin and I walked far to work with them, working up a sweat. But then the men said, "You should be home helping the housewife." Though we preferred, like Mary Magdalene, to be close to the source of life. We watched the thresher, a huge rime, winnowing the wheat from its stem, separating it for food or seed time. The straw was blown out to make it extend softly over the old straw pile, and when my cousin climbed it, she fell with a cry between the old and the new, an airless den close to the source of life. Knowing this could be her life's end, I yelled for the hired hand. With all his might, he forked the straw so she could breathe again, close to the source of life. The orchard was one of my favorite spots. This poem is called The Orchard. When the air is woven cool warm on a summer day towards fall, the apple trees bend low with fruit. The fallen Jonathans gathered make sweet cider in the wood press. The pear tree bears her fruit proudly, hung high and hard to reach. The ripe ones smell eloquent, like pear butter cooking on the stove. The place to be was under a tree, lying in the tall, drying grasses that had absorbed the sun. Peering up through limbs and leaves at the bright blue sky, with soft clouds floating by. I wondered what it would be like to ride on one and look below at me lying in the grass. Here's another harvest poem, Being Fed. From afar, like a steeple pointing to God, the round silo, a sentinel of farm life, towers above the barn. It's filled in fall with ripe corn stalks, brought from the field by wagon horses' men. Then the corn's thrown into the cutter, powered by the tractor, emitting huge sounds heard even in the house. The dog goes off to hide. The chopped stalks forced up the pipe, dropped in the sallow. Seth, sour, becomes silage to be fed to the cows in the winter. As we milk the cows in the enclosed stable, our overalls skin take on the pungent odor smelled also in the house, where we eat pudding made from the milk given by the cows.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Dorothy Holly, reading from her book, A Whole Quart Jar. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, in your own words, about farm life, since we know that you know about this.
Okay.
Can you just tell us a little bit about what it was like for you as a young girl growing up on a farm? And where were you, in Ohio?
Yes. Well, somehow I loved it. Some people hate their background of having grown up on a farm, but I loved it. I think it's partly because after my father died and my mother was very busy taking care of us and providing a way for us to all live together, that she didn't have much time for just sitting down with us and talking with us. And so the land was what was stable for me, because it's always there, and season follows season.
Mm-hmm. So you feel a really closeness to the land still.
Right.
Do you ever go back out to the farm, or do you?
Oh, sadly, it's all concrete and houses now.
Really? Huh. I was thinking of, I can't really imagine what it would be like to grow up on a farm, you know, without electricity, etc. It seems like it was kind of tough, but you remember it fondly.
Well, we made do.
Okay.
That's what I tell my grandchildren, make do in life.
Okay. I wanted to ask you also about, I imagine there are some women writers out there listening who get discouraged and wouldn't work on their book for 20 years. And so do you have any advice for them or words of encouragement for them?
Well, I was motivated to do this, and so from time to time, I would tell myself to get with it.
What motivated you?
Well, I really wanted it as a part of history. This kind of life is mostly gone. There may be some in small farmers, but farms are being bought up by conglomerates who make it just a big business.
So as a family history, but also a part of American history.
Yes.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's a part of farm life that you don't give extra talk. You just give me the direct answers.
Yes. I say I'm a woman of few words.
Okay. How about more poems then?
My brother and I are in college now, thanks to my grandmother telling grandfather to sign the tuition checks. 2 days. At our state school, OSU, we learned one December day of Pearl Harbor. A hush filled our dorms and minds. The campus numbers lessened as men answered the draft. Those left behind sandwiched letters and class. Fearing time cut short hastened a budding relationship into early marriage. One October day. Then after we finish college, all the grandparents are gone. My uncle sells the little farm close to the land. My uncle sells the house and land. We move out west to blue skies, to winding dirt roads leading to Pueblo Indians. They take clay and sand from the earth, form, paint pots, fire them with wood and dung, creating black-on-black pottery. This reminds me of my brother and me shaping bricks from clay found along the creek bed on our farm, where I first felt close to the land. Now as I spade and plant in the earth, of my city plot. My whole quart jar is full, as when I was four. Then as an epilogue, I wrote two poems in remembrance, patterns. My city grandmother took pink and white cloth, and block by block, stitch by stitch, made a lovely design, a light bright quilt, now too precious to recline upon. My farm grandmother quilted pieces dark in color from dresses she'd worn, pieces left from my mother making dresses for me. Now the worn cloth, tiny stitches, bring grandmothers to my heart. In the little rocking chair. Grandfather Beakley married twice. His first wife died. There was a child who died at age four. They'd given her a rocking chair. The rocking chair she sat in, my mother gave to me. My five children turned it over, laughed, slid down its back, rocked roughly until they broke the seat. After they were grown and gone, I found it in the attic. Searched for a craftsman to restore the seat to match the back, with strips of wood dark and light. As it was aging and I was too, it decorated my home, waiting for grandchildren. Rock slow, rock fast, each had their turn until their hips were too wide. Now, sitting in my living room with 100 years of memories absorbed in its wood, the little rocking chair awaits the next generation to do with it what they will. Then a few more poems from the internal part of the manuscript. Under her wings, grandmother brought a setting hen, a plump Rhode Island red, a setting hen and eggs 10. Mother hen kept the eggs warm and safe until they hatched to yellow fluff. She taught them how to seek and peck in the garden and barnyard, taught them how to try their wings, tuck them under hers at night. Offering. Wearing my brother's overalls, long-sleeved shirt, brimmed hat, I followed a path to the woods. Among the sweet-smelling grasses and buzzing bees, I reached between the briars for the ripe blackberries. I took the long walk back when my pail was full, heavy, an offering to my mother.
It's the poetry of Dorothy Holly, reading from her book entitled A Whole Quart Jar. Thank you so much, Dorothy.
Thank you.
It was great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Joel Grimes. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, independent public radio, 91.3 WYEP.